Today's episode is brought to you by Flexon. Flexon water hoses have been the choice of home gardeners and professional landscapers for over 60 years. Based right here in the U.S., Flexon offers a wide selection of hoses. Whether your customer is maintaining their home lawn and garden, or they're working with a complex professional landscape, whether you need a flexible, lightweight hose, a drinking water safe hose, or a heavy-duty hose with the latest non-kink technology, Flexon has the right hose for you. Visit FlexonHose.com today to learn more about what Flexon can do for you. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Taking Care of Business with Dan Trotencheck podcast. I am happy to be sitting here today with Gary Pitsford from Castle Wealth Advisors in NRHA's hometown here, not too far out of the center of Indianapolis, Indiana. Mm-hmm. So, Gary, thank you so much for being here with us today. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here. It should be fun.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Before we get too far into it, Gary, you've for some reason in these podcasts, I always go to people's age, but it's more about tenure in the industry. You have over 40 years, 45 years or so working kind of in the industry.
We have been working in the hardware retailing industry for about 44 to 45 years.
Yeah, okay. So once again, someone who knows their way around the comings and goings of the industry. So again, so thank you for sitting down with us here. One of the things I kind of want to start talking to you about, Gary, because this is certainly your area of expertise, is at NRHA, we get a lot of calls, and a lot of times the calls we get are from reporters or analysts who want to do a story, and kind of the sexy story that they like to always write about is the plight of small businesses, and it becomes an oft-repeated kind of thematic arc on that story, that either there's a small business that's opening up in their town, or a small business that's closing down in their town, and they always want to ask us. So what is it? What are the biggest threats that today's small business owners are facing? And again, there are a lot of answers to that question. And where I usually go, what they typically want to hear is, oh my gosh, Amazon is the biggest threat that's closing down or causing consternation among small business owners, or it's the big boxes and Home Depot, or it's what's going on with tariffs or things going on overseas. And I don't mean to discount those, because those are all certainly concerns. But what I usually say when we're talking about this industry is one of the biggest threats is one that's not so easy to see. And it's really a demographic threat. And what most people might not realize is of the 35,000 or so hardware stores, home centers, and lumber yards around the United States and in Canada, 99% roughly are family businesses in some way or another. And when you go to shows and you meet the people that own these businesses, there's some common characteristics that seem to appear. And some of that is that they're all getting a little bit older. And so one of the biggest kind of existential threats, if you will, to the industry is that we're not necessarily prepared for this mass succession that's going to be coming our way. And when the average owner of these businesses is in their late 50s, early 60s, it's a now problem, not a 10-year from now problem. And that's kind of the world you live in every day. Tell us a little bit about what you see.
It is. It's a world that I live in. In the hardware industry and a lot of other industries that are retail customer-based type industries. We work with 8 or 9 different industries. But when I go to conventions, and I do about 25 or 30 each year, I have a room full of people that are between 60 and 80 years old. Mm-hmm. And some of them bring their 45-year-old children and some don't. But the problem is that a big percentage are over the age of 60. And they're not prepared to sell. They've been running their businesses for 30, 40 years. They know how to run their business. They know how to compete with all those people you just talked about that are competitors with them. But they don't understand, what's my business worth? If I sell my business, will I have enough income? If I sell my business, how much tax do I have to pay? You know, who am I going to sell my business to? You know, because if you have a store in downtown Chicago, it might be easy to sell a retail hardware store. But if you're in downtown Du Bois, Wyoming, the closest competitor might be 100 miles away. So depending upon where you're at, where you're located, there's all kinds of problems that business owners don't know how to deal with. You know, so we've been helping people in all 50 states for, you know, probably 30 years. And we started at in the Midwest here 43, 44, 45 years ago. But yeah, the demographics of the owners is getting over the age of 60. They are not prepared because they've not dealt with these financial topics before.
And why do you think that is, Gary? I mean, obviously no one, I mean, it's like anything, no one wants to think about funeral preparations, and not mm-hmm. to equate this with that, but no one wants to necessarily think about retirement. Everybody thinks they're going to be running their business or living forever. But one of the biggest things that is probably most disturbing in my time in the industry to see is when you see a business that was a good, strong running business, mm-hmm. and simply because there is no orderly succession plan in place, that business really suffers. And we've seen it plenty of times when there is a generational transfer. So why do you think it is people tend to wait till they're in their, you know, edging up on retirement years to even begin thinking about what's going to become of my business?
Most of them just don't know what topics to think about. You know, with all these conventions that we go to every year, the most common question is people will come up to me and say, what do I do next? What is the first step? I don't even know where to start. What do I do? You know, so we help answer all these questions for people. You know, I was talking with a gentleman yesterday from the New England area who has a hardware store, and he's up and over the age of 75 and higher. And he told me, he says, I'm just tired. I'm wore out. I just want to move on, you know. But what happens is when I look at their financial statements to help with valuing the company, and I look at the last 3-4 years of financial statements, sales are going down, gross margins are going down. He's not watching the business, you know. Right. So because he's tired, or he or she, because they're tired and they're wore out, they don't want to do it anymore, they've kind of let the profitability drop off, the gross margins are down, and that's a bad time to try and sell the business. You know, when I go to conventions, you've heard me say that the last 3 years, you want to try and drive up the margins, drive down the expenses, make the thing look good, and then we can sell it for a profit, a higher profit, and then you can retire with more money.
Yeah, it's not like you want to, when you put your house on the market, you don't want to wait till the grass is up to your knees and the paint's yeah. flaking off. You want it to, your yard to look beautiful and,
exactly.
and the inside of your house to look beautiful. And obviously someone who is in that situation is probably more apt to make a poor decision or say, I'm mm-hmm. going to take less than the business is worth just because I want to kind of be done with it.
Yeah, if they'd have sold it 3 years ago, they'd make more money. But right. any buyer is going to say, I want to see your last 2 or 3 years tax returns.
Sure.
I want to see your financial statements. And if the last 2 or 3 years don't look good, you're going to get less money.
Yeah.
You know. So they need to prepare. They need, it's like getting your house ready for sale.
Yeah.
If you're going to sell your car, you clean it up.
Right.
If you're going to sell your house, you know, you clean it up. Mm-hmm. If you're going to sell your business, then clean it up.
Well, and I think that, you know, you've said a couple of times the conventions you go to, and I run into you a lot throughout the course of the year at these different things. And you're kind of like a rock star at these places. And what I mean is that you usually have a pretty good group of people that's in line waiting to talk to you. And to me, that's somewhat refreshing because I think hopefully the bell that NRHA, that you, that the other organizations, the distributors within the industry have been ringing for the last several years saying exactly what you just said is the time is now to start planning for this. Maybe people are recognizing that and now saying, okay, I do have to start planning. Is there a time when it's too early to start planning or a time when it's too late to start looking at this, Gary?
That's a great question. It's never too early, but 8 to 10 years out is a good starting point.
Yeah.
5 years out, you need to start getting into third gear, mm-hmm. you know, and if you're 2 or 3 years out, you better be in high gear getting everything done quickly.
Yeah.
Because I can't fix a problem like the gentleman I just talked about.
Right.
He's let it go down for 3 years. So the best we can do is to try and make the best of a bad situation. But if he works real hard for the next couple of years and make it look better, then we could sell it for more money. So The best answer is to start 3, 4, 5 years out.
Yeah.
In the last 6 months or so, if you want to sell 6 months from now, there's not a lot that I can do. There's a few things that we can do. But owners just need to do the best they can the last 2 or 3 years. And the economy is real good right now. You know, 08 and 09 was a bad time to
sure.
sell anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so we, the owners have had 2 or 3 good years. Sales are up. Gross margins should be up a little bit. You know, so now is a better time than 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a couple years ago, we actually did a story in Hardware Retailing Magazine where we walked through what do you need to be thinking about succession when you're in your 30s, when you're mm-hmm. in your 40s, when mm-hmm. you're in your 50s? Because what we found mm-hmm. is that even when you're buying into a business, there are certain things you could start thinking about mm-hmm. in terms of what is going to happen 30 years from now. And another thing I was just talking to another retailer about that addressed is there's also the contingencies. Everybody likes to think that they're going to be happy and healthy until retirement, but 40 years old, something can happen to your health. Yeah. 50 years old, something can happen to your health. And so it's never necessarily too early to start thinking about what happens if those things happen. Do I have a bench in my store? Do I have children that want into the business? Is that not an option for me? And if so, how do we structure a plan to create opportunities for other people that have an interest in the business?
Well, those are all great points. If you have 3 children and one of them wants to be in the business, then we 10 years out, 8 years out, you need to be training that child or 2 or 3 children.
Yeah.
Some of the families we work with have 4 children in the business. Mm-hmm. Some have 2 or 3. Some people have 3 children, but only one wants to be in the business. The other 2 picked a different career. So you need to be training the children. And I hate to say this, but I will anyway. Business owners are not good teachers.
Yeah. You might be good at what you do, but you're not mm-hmm. necessarily good at training others to do what you do.
Yeah. You need, in the last 3 or 4 years, to train that child. If the child's going to take over the business, a boy or a girl or whatever, teach them everything about the business, including the finances. Mm-hmm. You know, they teach them how to, you know, clean the shelves and order inventory and do advertising, but they never let them see the financial part. Mm-hmm. The children need to understand, and this is a problem about entrepreneurs, is that one of the best things that a young person can do is to take over an existing successful business. You can work real hard for yourself, or you can work real hard for somebody else, but it's a lot more fun to work real hard for yourself in a business that's got trained employees, that's got a great location, it's got thousands of customers, it's got predictable cash flow. You know, so the parents need to become good coaches, and I've written articles about it.
Mm-hmm.
Parents need to be a good coach, okay? You've been a quarterback for 30 years. Now, starting tomorrow, I don't want you to be the quarterback. I want you to be the coach. Go over on the sideline, put your son or daughter in as quarterback, let them make some plays, and you just stand over there and yell and become a coach and let the children learn all the good parts. You know, businesses are so important to communities. You know, they support Absolutely. Charities. They support the Boy Scouts and Little League and all kinds of things that they do in the communities. They help the employees, you know, they provide jobs for the employees, you know, they do so many great things that I love it when the next generation takes over a business, mm-hmm. you know, or if some people don't have children, you know, so maybe you got 2 or 3 key employees. So we design a plan so that they can buy you out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the things that I wanted to get to with you, Gary, is that I've had a lot of conversations with retailers who have said, you know, my kids, either they don't have kids or my kids have become different things and mm-hmm. taken their life in different directions and don't have an interest in going into business, but I have a manager that's done a great job for me or mm-hmm. or a couple of people who've done a great job, and their concerns have been, particularly when they're addressing it with a shorter horizon, is, you know, you have to come up with some kind of capital to be able to buy into the business. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes their retirement plan is around selling the business. And it's much more difficult for someone who's younger, maybe working at a, as a manager at a hardware store, to come up with the kind of capital to buy into a business. So then becomes, well, how do I give them or get them earned equity or let them build a stake in the business? And the shorter the horizon, the more complicated that becomes.
If you're going to be selling to your children, we can do it more quickly because of the tax laws on gifting to related parties, children. If we're going to be selling to key employees, it usually takes 4 or 5 years. So if the owner's willing to work part-time for 4 or 5 years and let that key employee start buying in over 3 or 4 years, we can develop a plan that makes it work for the key employee.
Yeah. And one thing that we've always found with the concept of succession, and we've written about it and talked about it so much through NRHA, is that what makes it difficult to really get your arms around just a blanket article that you could write is that every situation is so unique. Because we just, in the past 5 minutes or so, we've talked about one kid, three kids, one that wants to be involved in the business and two that don't, two that do and one that doesn't, or an employee. And so really, it takes a much more personal approach to really kind of develop a plan for a business that's going to work for them.
Every plan's different. Every company's different. You know, sometimes the owners have other assets and they don't desperately need a high income from the business. Sometimes the owner doesn't have high income someplace else. They don't have an investment account, or they don't have a bunch of apartment buildings, or they don't own the strip shopping center. You know, so they desperately need as much money from this business as they can come up with in order to retire. You know, and some people have big retirement needs and some don't. Every family's different.
You know, going back to something you were talking about a little bit ago, and I think that we see this quite a bit too, is that sometimes there are retailers that are very good at different things. And it doesn't mean that they can't be good at all things, because there's certainly plenty of those as well. But sometimes a retailer is really good at the customer service and really intuitive about what products their market needs. But then you see people running very successful businesses that aren't really into doing the deep financial dive into their business. And we do our cost of doing business study and so on. And we get a lot of calls from retailers like that are looking for help on really trying to understand beyond my net profit and beyond my top line sales, what's all the other stuff that goes into there? And another sad thing you see because of that often is that a lot of retailers don't have a real good grasp of the value of their business.
Yeah.
And one of the, I'm sure you hear this a lot, is there's a lot of people that think, well, you know, my name has a reputation in this town and that's worth a lot. And so I'd imagine one of the first things you try and get people to do is say, well, let's get our arms around what you really have here.
Yeah, some business owners are realistic about the value of their company, but most of them don't have a clue as to what it's worth, or they think it's worth more than what it really is. Yeah. You know, when somebody calls me up and they tell me my sales are $3 million and I think it's worth $2.5 million, I know right away that what I'm going to tell them is not good news.
Right, unless you've got a storeroom full of gold, then you probably,
Once we go through all the financials, you know, it might be 1 million, it might be 1.5, but it's not going to be 2.5.
Right,
You know, so it all based on assets and profitability and cash flow and what accountants call EBITDA.
Yeah.
You know, it's the usable cash flow that the business has, because if I sell to my children, they're going to need all the income that the company can produce to pay me off. If I sell to key employees, they need all the income to pay me off. If I sell to somebody else in my co-op industry, the more income I can deliver, the more EBITDA I can deliver, the more valuable my company. You know, so yes, inventory is important. Accounts receivable is important. But everybody revolves around cash flow.
Right.
You know, and if you deliver a lot of cash flow, then I can pay a higher price.
Well, and another issue with an orderly and successful transfer of the business has to be that it's also something that is set up for the people coming into the business to be successful. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen, and we've mm-hmm. seen situations where the new owners, be they children or from people from outside the business, have agreed to a plan to buy the business out or to take over the business, that when they get into it, they're like, we could be successful, but we have, the plan has so favored the former owners that yeah. we're really handcuffed with what we can do to build the business. What do you do, or what advice do you give to people on the other side of the succession process, Gary, that are maybe the children in the business or the managers in the business? What do you have to do to prepare to make sure that they're successful throughout the transition?
Well, when we put together a transition plan, if we're working with them, we will show them, here's how much cash flow over the last 3 years. Here's the average cash flow. Okay, let's say it's $300,000. Okay, and if we go to the bank payments are going to be $100,000. And if you take a pay increase because you're now president of the company, so that's another $100,000. So then we still got cash left over. But if we come up with a value that's way too high, and they have to either sign a promissory note or get a bank loan, you know, and if they got $300,000 to work with, and the taxes and all the principal and interest payments add up to $300,000, they're not going to make it.
Yeah,
they've got to have some cushion, you know. So we will show them, based on the last 3 years, here's how much you can afford.
So you're really addressing both sides of the transaction.
We are. Yeah. We're showing the owner that, yes, they can afford to pay this much, and we're showing the buyer, whether it be children or key employees, yeah, here's what the bank payment's going to be, and here's how much cash flow, and I can still get a pay raise.
Yeah.
You know, so instead of making $50,000 a year as manager, I can make $90,000 a year as owner.
Right.
And still have a profit at the end of the year. So, yeah, in our reports, we show both sides that it'll work, or we'll show both sides that, no, it won't work because you pick too high a price.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when you would imagine go back and try and work through the deal, or mm-hmm. give advice on, here's where you might be able to make some concessions, or maybe look at things a little bit differently that'll yeah. adjust that.
Yeah. 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 We have to adjust something. And there's all kinds of things that can be done. It depends on the design of the plan or the blueprint. Also depends on, is it an S corp? Is it a C corp? Is it an LLC? Is it a partnership? So every one of those entities has a different type of blueprint.
Yeah.
You know, so we have to account for all those ideas.
We're going to take a break from our interview for just 1 second to get a quick message from one of our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Coles Wild Bird. With Coles' line of top quality birding products, your customers get what they paid for: more wild birds on the bird feeder. Launched from the family garage over 35 years ago, Coles Wild Bird Products is a true mom-and-pop success dedicated to making your store the place for birders to shop again and again. Coles believes that birds are like people. Give them what they like to eat and they'll come back and bring their friends. After all, if you just want bird seed, buy any brand. If you want birds, buy Coles. I want to ask you a question kind of about the industry and the direction we're going. You and I had spoken a little bit about this when we were kind of getting ready for the mm-hmm. to do the podcast, and it was really top of mind for me because just last week I had spoken to a reporter who had reached out to us asking about, there was a store in their town that had been under the same ownership for a while but was changing owners, and he wanted to know about, you know, is this common within home improvement retailing that people are still investing in buying and owning hardware stores and home mm-hmm. centers. And I said, well, of course it is. But one trend that we do certainly see in the industry is that we probably have fewer owners that are now owning more stores.
Right.
And a lot of the people, as I just kind of look and anecdotally think about the demographics in my head, you have probably a lot of owners that are in their 40s, 50s, that are kind of in that growth mode for their careers, that do seem to be actively looking for, okay, I have 3 stores by next year, I want to have 4 stores or 5 stores, and they kind of understand that model. And you and I began talking about this kind of being a trend that you're seeing in the industry. Is that an accurate portrayal, you think, of what you're seeing kind of going on in terms of ownership trends within the industry?
It is. In the last 5 or 6 years, it's become more common for owners to have 2, 3, 4 stores.
Right.
I can think of one family here in the Midwest that we've worked with. They had one store when I first met them, and then the owner bought a second store.
Right.
And he was doing real good with 2 stores. So he talked his son into coming with him. So now mom and dad and a son, now they have 3 stores, and they're negotiating to buy a 4th store. You know, so in like 5 years, they've gone from 1 to 3 stores, or almost 4 maybe. But that's more common. There's also a lot of people that have 10 or 15 stores. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that have 2 and 3 stores, whereas it used to be just 1 store for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, 30, 40 years ago. And it's better for the industry, I think, because if you have a really sharp group that's managing 3 or 4 stores, they can really market the retail products. And they can do a better job with advertising, with computers, with software, with training personnel. They can do better than just one person with one store.
Right. There's that economy of scale that you kind of get to. And another thing that we see that is not at all uncommon today, and you were talking about this family business, is that you were talking about training the next generation to get them ready. And when there are multiple stores involved, what we'll see a lot is the son, daughter, or manager, whomever it is, let them run one of our new stores and kind of cut their teeth on that. Then they're more prepared to kind of take over the business. And something else that we're certainly seeing, and we talked about this, is you're at all these conventions, and there seems to be a pretty concerted effort internally, individually, amongst the wholesaling community. And I think even at this point, the manufacturing community realizes that you know, if the independent segment of the industry is going to continue to grow and thrive and survive, we have to address the succession issue. And I certainly know that, at least at the wholesale level, there's a lot more, the fact that they invite you to the markets and ask you to come and meet with people, that there's more concern about making sure that these issues are addressed.
It's something that's really grown rapidly in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, it was something to talk about 30 and 40 years ago, but there are so many business owners in the United States that are over 60, over 70, that the big organizations are very concerned, and they want us to come and teach classes, provide as much education as possible, and then also be there to help counsel and talk to people, you know, and they're picking people on their payroll to concentrate on succession planning, you know, and to help members, because they want to keep them within their co-op, obviously, but they also want them to be successful, and they want a successful transition, because it doesn't do the purchasing co-op any good if the price is too high and the buyer fails. Mm-hmm. You know, they want everything to go smoothly.
Sure.
And so do we, you know. So it's becoming more and more obvious to all the co-op operations, you know. And it's not just hardware. It's many other industries, you know. But in the hardware industries, you and I both go to all these conventions. They're more and more concerned every year about helping their members get a good price, get a good retirement, get a good transition.
Yeah.
They want them to be successful in going to the next chapter, you know, whatever their retirement might be.
Well, it's in everybody's best interest, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's for their members, which are co-op members, the stock in the co-op. It's good for the member, and it's also good for the co-op. It's good for everybody.
Right. You used a word there, and I want to touch on this. You know, we talked about the fact that most of these are family businesses, and it doesn't matter probably wherever you are in the world or whatever industry you're in. Whenever there's a family business, there tends to be family issues, and you used the word counsel. And what percentage of the time you spend or when you're working with these companies, what percent of the time are you wearing your financial advisor hat versus wearing your counselor hat? And how do you address those issues? I mean, it becomes a real issue, and we've seen it before, where mom and dad want to pass on the business, particularly if it's a successful business, and you have 2 kids that say, we want to cash out. We want our money out of this business. And you got the other guy that's been working in the business his whole life that says, no, I want to run something and make something out of this. How do you deal with those kind of things? Because those are the kind of problems that can cause a going concern, an ongoing good, well run business to close down.
Yeah. The family part is something that we spend a lot of time on. You know? So to answer your question, probably 30% of the time I deal with numbers and 70% of the time I deal with people.
Yeah.
And it's not just mom and dad, but it's the kids or employees, and it's the in-laws. It's the spouses, whether it be a man or a woman or whatever. But I have to, like with a family I deal with in Colorado, mom and dad have four kids and all four kids are married, mm-hmm. And they keep talking about six, two plus four. And I said, no, we're not dealing with six. We're dealing with 10. You've got four kids and four in-laws and mom and dad. I've got 10 people that we have to deal with. It's not six, and they said, oh yeah, you're probably right, So, because the in-laws, the husbands and the wives also have concerns, and we want to make sure that they understand what's going on, I just finished a program with some people in Pennsylvania, and the family brothers are in their late 60s. Mom and dad are in their late 90s. And it almost come, they almost had a fist fight in the parking lot. So it doesn't matter how old you are, but the family issues are probably more important than the numbers. Yeah. I can make the numbers work, but I got to understand the dynamics of the children and, which son's going to be president and which son's going to be vice president, and which daughter or daughter-in-law, And a lot of times I'll deal with a company where there's a son working there and a son-in-law working mm-hmm. there. And mom and dad say, well, we want to move stock to our son and our daughter, but what do we do about our son-in-law? And I said, well, I'll be the bad guy. I got to tell him that we're not going to give him any stock. We're going to give it to his wife.
Right.
And people always say, well, what if there's a divorce? I said, we handle that, So this is where all the legal documents come in that our accountants and lawyers here in the office help people with. But if we have two or three or four stockholders, we've got to have buy-sell agreements that cover death, divorce, disability, personal bankruptcy.
Sure.
All the things that can go wrong. We've got to have leases, triple net leases, but between whoever owns the real estate and whoever owns the business.
Yeah.
We've got to have wills and trusts. We've got to have durable powers. I talked about somebody a second ago that's in their 90s, okay? They're going to get to the point where they can't sign their checks to pay for their normal monthly bills.
Right.
So who's going to pay their bills? Who's going to talk to the surgeons in the hospitals? So
we've
got to have durable powers. We've got to have wills and trusts and leases and buy-sell agreements. And all of that is what protects the family.
Yeah.
And they're not bad documents. They're good documents that protects everybody.
Well, and the thing is, when you list it all out and you list all the possible scenarios, it can sound really complicated. And obviously there are issues that become complicated, but I think we want to also make sure that people understand it's something that people like you deal with all the time. Mm-hmm. You talk to, it might be the only time this family puts together a succession plan or this business owner ever deals with it once in their life. People like you are dealing with this multiple times a year, every day. So while it might sound really complicated, and there are certainly points that could get, people like you understand how to navigate your way through these things.
We do. And we not only work with the clients, but we also work with their attorneys and accountants. Because sometimes if they're in, Albuquerque, New Mexico or someplace else, the lawyer and the accountant, they don't do this every day like we do.
Right.
So sometimes that's why our attorneys here will work with their attorneys to make sure the documents fit the family, make sure that the buy-sell agreement fits the family. So we do it all the time, and it's pretty routine for us, but all the documents are different because family members are different, mm-hmm. and it has to fit the family. But it looks complicated, but it's not really. Once we decide what we're going to do, then we just make the documents fit the family.
Yeah. What would you say is, obviously you've done this with a while, you've dealt with lots of situations. What is the one thing that you see that just comes up time and time again when you're starting down the road of helping someone prepare their business transfer, that you say, if they just did this one thing or knew this one thing, it would make the process a whole lot easier?
Well, to answer that specifically, the one thing that most families or most business owners should do 3 or 4 or 5 years before they sell is to surround themselves with great advisors, mm-hmm. a business attorney who can start giving advice on what to do with the business to get it ready, accountants that can say, here's what you need to do the next 2 or 3 years to save taxes, you know, financial people that can look at the whole client's net worth and figure out what he should be doing differently the next 4 or 5 years, you know. So it's kind of like going to the doctor every year. Right. You go to an MD and you get checked out for, you know, chest x-rays, blood tests and everything, okay? Right. And you need to do the same thing with your business. If there's one thing that they should do 3 or 4 years ahead of time is to get some financial doctors and start talking to them every year, 3 or 4 years before they sell. Because if they pick the right doctors who can give them the right ideas, they can make the company more valuable. They can train their employees or their children better to run the business. So if I had to pick one thing that they should do is to pick the right financial doctors to work with every year. You know, when I'm giving speeches, I usually tell people that your advisory team or your dream team, pick the right people who know how to sell businesses, who deal with selling businesses, and talk to them for at least 2 or 3 hours every year before the sale, you know, and force them to work together and figure out what you can be doing differently to improve your financial health, to stay on the same theme. Because there's things that business owners can obviously do
sure.
to make it better. They just don't know because they don't do it every day like we do.
Yeah.
So if they were talking to a financial doctor, like one of us, you know, a lawyers, accountants, financial people, that they could just spend a couple hours with this team every year, they'll be better prepared for retirement.
Well, and you know, Gary, that's it's great advice. And the truth is that doesn't have necessarily anything to do with succession. It's one thing we preach all the time is that just like getting a checkup, you should be checking up on your business every year. And whether mm-hmm. you're 32 years old and just bought into a business or mm-hmm. 62 years old and thinking about leaving a business, it's just good, solid business advice. So,
and it's very, very important the last 4 or 5 years.
Absolutely. Yeah. As going to the doctor probably gets a little bit more important the older you get.
Yeah, yeah.
The,
yeah, when you're in your 70s and 80s, it's more important to keep that doctor's appointment.
It is. Gary, hey, thank you so much for taking some time and talking to us today. Gary Pitsford with Castle Wealth Advisors, and we'll put Gary's contact information along with the notes from this podcast. Gary, I'm sure everybody from the retail side, manufacturer side, will be able to see you in the fall market season as it's coming up.
I'll be at all the conventions and I'll be walking down the hallway. I'll be the guy with no hair.
Yeah, you and me both. Huh? Gary, I'd love to maybe have you come back in a future podcast and maybe we could swap some of those stories about the crazy succession arguments you might have to get in and take a look at some of the little bit messier side of building a succession plan. Gary, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Glad to be with you.
Today's episode is brought to you by Sacrete. Are you looking to add quality concrete, mortar, and stucco mixes, as well as repair and specialty items to your product lineup? Sacrete provides the tools you need to run a better business, whether that's through exceptional customer support, sales and marketing tools, varied product assortments, or just finding reliable products. Sacrete offers knowledgeable retail experts that understand the needs of your store. To learn more, visit www.sacrete.com/hardwareretailing.